You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us now. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. Big, big thanks to my last guest from the American Foreign Policy Council, Ilan Berman. If you want to check out some of Mr. Berman's work, especially on Iran, make yourself a little bit more knowledgeable about the area, how we got to this moment, you can check all that out at afpc.org. We have breaking news this hour. The Federal Reserve, led by Jerome Powell, is keeping interest rates right where they are, much to the chagrin of Donald Trump. More on that in a moment. In addition, Mr. Powell saying the following: the Fed is now predicting a brutal mix for 2025, inflation up to 3%, growth down to 1.4%, unemployment up significantly to 4.5%, and again, holding rates steady for now. However, hat tipping to two potential cuts later this year. We've got just the guy to help us make sense of it all. His name is Indy Duttagupta. He is the Doris Duke Distinguished Visiting Fellow at Georgetown, a former House Ways and Means professional staffer, an expert on economic inequality, and currently with the Center for Law and Social Policy. Thanks so much for joining us again, Indy. It's a pleasure to have you.
I'm happy to be back, Maggie.
Let's take a listen to a bit of Donald Trump this morning on the White House Rose Garden lawn talking about Fed Chair Jerome Powell.
A stupid person, frankly, at the Fed. He probably won't cut today. Europe had 10 cuts and we had none. We're going to lose because of this too late. I call him too late Powell because he's always too late. I mean, if you look at him, every time I did this, I was right 100%. He was wrong. Maybe I should go to the Fed. Am I allowed to appoint myself, Doug? I don't know. Am I allowed to appoint myself at the Fed? I do a much better job than these people. So anyway, we should be 2 points lower. It'd be nice to be 2.5 points lower. And by the way, if he's worried about inflation, that's okay. I understand that. I don't think there's going to be any. So far, there hasn't. But now we have a man that just refuses to lower the Fed rate, just refuses to do it. And he's not a smart person. I don't even think he's that political. I think he hates me, but that's okay. You know, he should.
And so on and so forth. First and foremost, what impacts the Fed's decisions about interest rates? To be specific, why would the Fed keep interest rates steady right now?
The Federal Reserve, Maggie, has a dual mandate. They're trying to balance the prices overall in the economy, the price levels and the growth over time or inflation, with the unemployment rate, as the two sometimes can push against each other, especially in extreme situations. So the Federal Reserve, in a normal situation where we were seeing some proper economic management, may have felt quite comfortable with some sort of interest rate cut today, but we're facing some significant headwinds for the U.S. economy in light of not just the Trump administration, but also the Republican-led Congress. So you can see where the Federal Reserve is worried about tariffs, which are raising prices for folks, unless the president was just admitting that they don't need to worry about it because he's going to chicken out and not do them, which maybe is the right policy, actually. But and you can see it with the tax giveaways for millionaires, billionaires, and their children, their heirs, and even as the congressional Republicans are looking to gut Medicaid, health coverage in other ways, food assistance, and other things that would just raise prices for folks and make it harder for them to afford a basic living standard.
This combination of tariffs, which are taxes largely paid by the middle class, because the middle class is the consumer class, billionaires sit on their money, they don't spend their money, it just doesn't work like that. This combination, this 1-2 punch of tariffs, tariff chaos, which makes it hard, especially for small business owners who employ upwards of 68 million people. the combination of that plus the big brutal bill and gutting things like Medicaid. Reports have been that the Senate markup coming out of the Finance Committee seeks even deeper Medicaid cuts than the $880 billion being proposed by the House GOP, MAGA folks on the House side. When 71 million Americans get their health care coverage through Medicaid, and the number one reasons that American families enter bankruptcy and file bankruptcy is what? Ding, 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 ding. Medical debt, everybody. This is what Jerome Powell has to address. And I won't get into Howard Lutnick's qualifications or lack thereof to be Commerce Secretary, but a steady hand from an executive branch administration is part of what would help the Fed chair feel comfortable enough to reduce rates. Is that a simplified way of saying what you've been saying? But again, policy decisions that will hurt the consumer middle class, coupled with an explosion in the deficit, the likes of which we quite haven't gotten our minds around, the CBO estimates change, again, plus the terror tariff taxes, the Fed wants to see some sort of cognizable, reasonable economic policy. We simply haven't gotten that, have we? Is it a bit about that?
Yeah, there's a serious lack of economic policy coherence. Mm-hmm. And that does leave the Federal Reserve Bank and the Board of Governors in a nearly impossible spot. So look, on the one hand, you've got these obvious inflationary pressures to raise prices between the import taxes on American consumers, lavish tax cuts, and at the same time, the supply chain uncertainty, above and beyond normal tariffs, is going to create a lot of cost pressures. So companies are going to have to raise the prices of goods and services. And on the other hand, you might think, well, actually, not only this bill, but overall, the Trump administration's agenda is reducing economic growth. We're gutting investment in science, higher education, research, and development. We are reducing our population through really ill-advised, to say the least, and inhumane immigration policies. And in fact, the programs that they're proposing cutting, like Medicaid and SNAP, especially for kids, actually more than pay for themselves. So we are really looking at a tough long-term economic outlook entirely created by the current policymakers in the current administration and in Congress that might lead to interest rate cuts. But how can the Fed justify it at this moment with so much uncertainty around the import taxes on American consumers and the tax cuts, which are, by the way, going to drive up deficits dramatically and cause additional problems?
I wanted to pick up on something that you said there. One of the great competitive economic advantages in this country is the research infrastructure, is our institutions of higher learning. Just here in Wisconsin today, the MAGA elected officials in our state legislature have proposed devastating cuts to funding to what was once the crown jewel of Wisconsin, and that was our university systems. That loss of competitive advantage there, the loss of the labor force. There are 2 million undocumented workers in our nation's farmlands right now harvesting the food that Americans eat and export. And you subtract 1 million of those, you know, food prices go up, all else being equal. We add now into the mix, Indy, what's going on in the Mideast. And the fact that Iran, if it could massively disrupt oil shipping channels in the Persian Gulf, which would, of course, drive up oil prices. Would it have, I mean, would Jerome Powell been laughed at by every knowledgeable economist if he would have cut rates today? I mean, let's be honest about it. That was simply not an option given what's going on in the world.
Look, today's decision was a unanimous decision, as we understand it. There was no dissent for the moment in the vote to maintain interest rates at the level there are. So this isn't about President Trump thinking he's somehow more capable of being the chair of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors than Jerome Powell. He's saying he's more capable than the entire group of governors there. And I think I'm really glad that you brought up the challenge that we face on our dependence on fossil fuels and oil. We already are the world's largest producer of oil and produce more than we have essentially at any time in history. That was true under President Biden.
Yes.
And yet we are still dependent on foreign oil. And you might feel that we were at least moving in the right direction with the Inflation Reduction Act and even some of the other investments in Chips and Science Act in semiconductors and also investments in our infrastructure and a bipartisan infrastructure law. And yet what we're seeing in the big brutal bill, as I think you aptly call it, is a repeal of the very incentives and subsidies to shift towards clean energy and break our dependence on fossil fuel and especially fuel from abroad. But it's a global market, right? So there are some risks. We don't know how this is going to play out. And I always think we emphasize, of course, the humanity first of folks who are at war. But there are some really serious economic risks. It's hard to see when we're in a more uncertain period in recent years.
Last, and we've got about a minute left, Indy, as a preview of what I'm going to be focusing on in celebration and honor of Juneteenth tomorrow, I'm talking about Black women in the workplace. And I wondered, since you have focused so much of your scholarship and thinking on equity, economic equity issues, boy, when we hit economic pain points in our economy, Black women especially are the canaries in the coal mines. They are often the first fired, the last hired and the first fired. They often experience the pain points most acutely. Can you speak to the risks and the challenges for Black women, especially in a Donald Trump-led American economy?
Well, first of all, Maggie, I appreciate you drawing attention to this topic because I think so many people are so afraid to just acknowledge the realities in this country now. But we are only going to go stronger as we can address some of the inequities we face, whether by race or gender or other fronts. And I would say that you're right. Black women often face significantly higher unemployment rates. They're paid less for the same jobs and are often the sole breadwinners in their families. So anything we can do to improve their lives will be good for the rest of America.
Thanks so much. That is Indy Duttagupta, Doris Duke Distinguished Visiting Fellow at Georgetown with the Center for Law and Social Policy and an advisor to community change. Thanks, Indy. We're going to be talking about the landmark SCOTUS decision on trans rights when we come back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, I was calling and texting a lot of my closest friends and people all across the LGBTQ community today, but especially the people that I know and love that are trans, because the Supreme Court today said that our nation's promise of equal treatment under the law doesn't apply to trans people, more or less. They were specifically considering a ban on trans care for young people that Tennessee had adopted. And instead of applying the highest constitutional scrutiny standard, what is called heightened scrutiny, which requires a government who's treating people in different groups because of who they are, especially if that and if that relates to gender and sex and your all manner of things, race. Yeah, we need to really make sure that there are good gosh darn reasons for the government to be treating people differently based on who they are. And today the Supreme Court said trans people don't get that heightened scrutiny. All the government has to do is come up with some mealy-mouthed set of, it can be total pseudoscience reasons why we'll treat one group differently than another group. And by differently, I mean giving people less rights. That is what the Supreme Court decided in some of the most tortured language I have read in a long time. This decision today by the Supreme Court flying in the face of a decision that had given many of us hope. And that was the Bostock decision. If you've got time, you want to Google that, read all about that decision. That was in the employment discrimination context. Again, there the Supreme Court said someone's gender identity cannot be used as the basis to treat them differently in the workplace under Title VII. Again, not the decision the Supreme Court reached today. I'm very pleased and honored to be joined by Abigail Swetz. She's the executive director of Fair Wisconsin. Welcome back to the program, Abigail. My condolences. I hope that you are as well as can be expected on today.
I was in contact with a lot of incredible trans people in my life today as well. And it is a disappointing is the word I'll use now because I'm on the radio decision that came out of the Supreme Court court today. I think the most important thing we have to say, though, is just a message to the trans youth of Wisconsin and the trans youth of this country. We love you. We will always fight for you. Thank you for being you. And please, please continue staying with us through this course. We will figure out a way out of this. But you're right. It was a disappointing day today at the Supreme Court.
We will figure out a way through this. We must, because our kids demand it and need it. I'm going to second that. We love you. We see you. We will continue to stand up for you to every trans person out there, especially trans kids. Abigail, was there anything about my super high level summary of what the Supreme Court did that needs a technical correction? We'll get into more of what was operating in the decision in a bit, but I just wanted to start there before we move forward.
Yeah, thanks for asking. I think one of the things that is always important for me to remember about this decision is that it is about a gender-affirming healthcare ban in Tennessee. And so it only has bearing on gender-affirming healthcare bans and not on any other trans-specific bills or trans-specific legislation or laws or executive orders. Those are different. And Bostock, for example, actually is still, that still
good
stands
law.
As law. It's still good law. And thank goodness for that. But that the most important thing for us to know in Wisconsin about this Supreme Court decision is that it has absolutely no impact on Wisconsin. Wisconsin has gender affirming care access for youth. There is no ban in this state. There is still no ban in this state. There should not be, from a legal standpoint, any change to care for trans youth in their health care in the state of Wisconsin. And I think that is incredibly, incredibly important for people to understand.
Again, no change to a course of treatment that your child or a child that you know and love and support is in. No change in the state of Wisconsin. There are, however, I believe the last count I heard was 29 states that have these sorts of bans on gender-affirming care for young people. That's more than half. So. Yeah. Millions of kids, maybe not millions, it's a percentage-wise, small percentage, but at such great peril and risk. Let's start with the basics. What is gender-affirming care, and what specific kinds of care were at issue in this decision?
So gender-affirming care for trans youth is a lot of things, but most important to know is it is medically necessary. It is age appropriate. It is highly individualized, like any care is in the healthcare system. And it is incredibly respectful and even joyous. And how many times do you get to say that about a trip to the doctor?
But
Healthcare for trans youth is treatment for gender dysphoria. It's medically necessary because we know that when gender dysphoria is treated, trans youth experience less psychological distress, their mental health drastically improves, rates of depression, anxiety, suicidality, they all go down significantly. And I think we have to keep in mind that this care is so important when we're talking about what it is. And we know that there is no one-size-fits-all approach to medicine. And that's why a ban is such a problem, because yes, it is a one-size-fits-all. It's a one-size-says-no. And that's a huge problem. And why a ban is so dangerous, frankly. Access to gender-affirming care is really about age-appropriate interventions. As trans people grow up into happy, healthy adults, there are no medical interventions until puberty, then maybe puberty pause medications, then maybe hormone treatment. It's all so highly individualized. And again, that's why a ban is so detrimental.
Folks, we've got Abigail Swetz, the executive director of FAIR Wisconsin. Our discussion of this monumental decision from the Supreme Court continues after these important messages right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's Pride Month, which makes what happened today in the Supreme Court all the more sad and devastating to many across the LGBTQIA plus community. I'll also say this, in all of recorded human history, trans people have existed. And despite the MAGA regime's best efforts, despite maybe even the Supreme Court's best efforts, trans people are here. They're here to stay. They're part of our communities, our workplaces, our churches, our synagogues. Trans people exist. And so the question to every culture, to every society, to every democracy especially, is for a group of people whose identity is trans, who feel and experience as young people potentially gender dysphoria, do we want them to be able to access healthcare in the way that a cisgendered person does? Do we want them to enjoy equal protection under the laws? Today, the Supreme Court, considering a trans care youth ban from, a transgender affirming care ban for young people in Tennessee, ruled that indeed equal protection won't extend to those youths in Tennessee. I've got Abigail Swetz, executive director of FAIR Wisconsin, here to help us understand the ramifications. And again, Abigail, we want to begin with this critically important point about gender-affirming care here in Wisconsin.
Yes. So the most important thing to know for Wisconsin listeners about this Supreme Court case is that it has no impact on Wisconsin whatsoever. Wisconsin does not have a ban on gender-affirming care. And so from a legal standpoint, there should be no change to access in gender-affirming care for youth in Wisconsin. Trans youth should be able to continue to access the care that they need here. I will say, we know these kinds of things have chilling effects, right? And so from a legal standpoint, there should be no impact. If there is an impact, I think FAIR Wisconsin needs to know. So please tell us, for lack of a better way to put it. We always have a tip line available. It's testimony@fairwisconsin.com. I want to know so that we can better advocate for you. We are the LGBTQ plus civil rights organization of the state. I can only help protect your civil rights if I know what's missing. So please, please, please tell us if you are seeing these sort of like pre-compliance aspects.
Yeah.
But it should have zero impact on the care here in Wisconsin.
When you talk about that chilling impact, one of our regular listeners on Facebook, Brett, posted that he knows a dear friend who has a trans child. They have moved to Vancouver because the parent is so concerned about the way his child may be treated. And Abigail, we will return to precisely what are we talking about when we talk about gender affirming care for youth, and sure, what it is not as well. But I'd be remiss if I didn't make this point. While gender affirming care is legal and accessible for youth in the state of Wisconsin, and the Supreme Court decision has absolutely no legal impact here, as you and I have discussed on this program before, what we are seeing in many public school systems is antagonism, policies that are, it seems, almost intentionally designed to deprive trans kids of safety while they're in school. I wondered if you could just address that a bit and maybe speak to parents out there that have trans kids about what to look out for if their kid is potentially being harassed or treated unfairly in schools, your thoughts and best advice for parents at this juncture.
Sure. So I am a parent. My child is very, very young. So we don't know my child's gender identity yet because she's 13 months old at the moment. But I am also a former Gender and Sexuality Alliance advisor. I taught middle school for years. And I think as someone who's been in the shoes of being an advisor to these youth, one of the things that I think back on a lot is listening directly to them about what they need, right? And I had the honored position of having been a middle school teacher to have that access to youth in a way that I also know parents do, to have access to be able to truly listen to what the youth in your life need. And one of the things that's just been rumbling around through my head today all day is I remember asking one of my kids in the GSA, what do you need from a leader? What do you need from a president? And my student said, I need a president who understands what empathy is. Mm. And I know that, frankly, we don't have that right now. But the rest of us, adults in these children's lives, can be leaders by showing that empathy, by listening to them when they tell you what they need. I am cisgender. I am not trans. I don't necessarily understand every nuance of the trans identity of someone who's speaking to me. I don't think I need to, in order to understand that they do.
Yes.
They understand who they are. And they understand who they are at whatever age they are telling you they understand it. And that is so important for us to keep in mind. And so for all the people out there who love and support our trans kids, I know today is a difficult day. I hope you also are seeing that there are so many of us out there together with you, and that you're hearing from us who, you know, going on the radio, making speeches and so on to really bring home this idea. We are unified in our empathy and our support for our trans youth. And we know that when they tell us what they need and when they tell us who they are, they're right and we should deliver.
Folks, that's Abigail Swetz. She is the executive director of FAIR Wisconsin, Wisconsin's premier and only civil rights organization dedicated to the LGBTQ community. We have some breaking news. NBC is reporting that the Trump administration has announced that they will be shutting down the national LGBTQ youth suicide hotline, the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, in 30 days. Sorry, getting a little emotional here. The cruelty is just unbelievable. Abigail, your thoughts?
It's horrifying. And I think, I don't know if I'm going to be able to be as profound as I wish I could be in this moment. But I think it is very well known that our LGBTQ plus youth face significant mental health challenges. And the fact that that is well known sometimes masks the fact that that is not an automatic, that is not a self-fulfilling prophecy. People do not experience mental health outcomes because they are LGBTQ plus. They experience mental health outcomes because of the societal pressures and the biases and the bigotry and the policies that are anti-trans that they have to live in. They live in a toxic soup of homophobia and transphobia that is at this moment governmentally sanctioned.
Yes.
And so the fact is that removing supports like the 988 line add to that societal pressure that creates that outcome. And frankly, inclusive policies at school or funding for LGBTQ plus research or funding for LGBTQ plus specific hotlines, because it makes it possible for you to talk to someone who really understands you. Those are all pressure valves.
Yes.
And they make it more possible for our LGBTQ plus kids to live fully and authentically and healthily. And that is what we need. And so in the face of this kind of governmental decision, if we're talking Supreme Court, if we're talking 988 hotline, I think we always have to come back to what can we as trusted adults do in the lives of our children. And that is to be a trusted adult. And you mentioned it was Pride Month. There are a lot of rainbows around on Pride Month. That's fabulous. We should have them out all year.
All year.
Because in order to be a trusted adult for an LGBTQ plus youth, they need to be able to find you.
Find
they need
you.
To be able to identify you. And so, you know, it might seem sort of silly to say that like a rainbow on your lanyard at work makes a difference, but it does.
It does.
Because rainbows make it possible for trans kids to breathe. So this is incredibly important for us to keep in mind in the face of all of this ugliness that is coming from, you know, official sectors of our society. We as individuals can absolutely still make a difference in a trans kid's life.
Folks, again, if you're just joining us, that's Abigail Swetz, Executive Director of FAIR Wisconsin. We're discussing the Supreme Court's decision today, upholding Tennessee's gender-affirming care ban for young people. Again, important to note, there is no such ban in Wisconsin, and trans youth here in Wisconsin can continue to receive the care that they and their families, in consultation with their medical professionals, decide. There's something so deeply personal and invasive about this, and the follow-up from the Trump administration to shut down the 988 headline, right? Like, when you listen to politicians that are defending the ban, right, what they will say is young people don't know what they really want. We're concerned about their mental health. We don't want them to make a decision that they lay. There's this whole litany of sort of smokescreen, reasonable sounding things that they'll say to try to defend this ban in the face of what is often overwhelming testimony from trans youth themselves and their parents and their families and medical experts testifying in favor of gender affirming care. The entire fig leaf of caring about kids is entirely revealed as utter garbage by the Trump administration's decision to get rid of the 988 suicide hotline, right? Like, if you cared about kids who are trans and you held a good faith belief, which I'm just going to say isn't a good faith belief, it's politicization of the most intimate issues for families and their kids. But if I could even extend that benefit of the doubt, which I generally don't, it's complete, like, nope, the emperor has no clothes, and I mean that nearly literally. This shows that it's not about any of these rational basis reasons that have been trotted out for this. This is about erasure.
It's about power.
It's about power. And the power to erase, power, yes.
And it's about taking power away from people who need it, right? And so I think one of the other things that always bothers me about the way that people talk about the healthcare that trans youth need is that it is always in consultation and with full consent of the parents.
Yes.
And so this is also a decision that impacts parents' ability to do what is best for their children and a doctor's ability to do what is best for a patient. And politics and politicians and, frankly, courts should not be a part of that decision-making process. That's one of the reasons it's so important that, like, we keep in mind that all good healthcare is highly individualized, right?
Yes.
Well, this is good healthcare. It is. Their standards of care have been rigorously researched. Even the American Academy of Pediatrics released a statement today denouncing the Supreme Court decision, saying the science still supports gender-affirming care and kids still need it.
The American Society of Pediatricians, that rabid left wing. I mean, Abigail, can you stick around for one additional segment? Thank you so much. That is Abigail Swetz, Executive Director of Wisconsin's civil rights organization called FAIR Wisconsin. You can go to their website. If you're experiencing discrimination, you need support, go to FAIR Wisconsin's website. We'll be back with Abigail and me, Maggie Dawn, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. This discussion continues on the other side.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. A big thanks to all of the guests today, starting with Jeff Mandel and Scott Thompson from Law Forward. We were joined by an expert, Elon Berman, from the American Foreign Policy Council to help us understand the situation in Iran, joined by Indy Gupta to understand what's going on with the big, brutal bill and the Fed's interest rate decision today. And last, but probably most importantly this afternoon, joined by Abigail Swetz of FAIR Wisconsin. She's the executive director there. FAIR Wisconsin advocates for the civil rights of the LGBTQ community. And Abigail, what I want to say to people is, hey, do you have trans kids and you don't live in a state that has gender-affirming care? Come to Wisconsin. We've got it here. We will happily welcome you into our communities. Where can folks find out more about your organization, Abigail?
So our website is fairwisconsin.com, pretty easy to remember. We've got some information there about how to take action, how to sign up for a newsletter, which is how you get action alerts like the one we sent out today to make sure that everyone understood the impacts of this Supreme Court ruling on Wisconsin, which, to be clear, should be nothing. Wisconsin does not have a ban. This does not create one. And also, just going to put it out there again, we know that sometimes these things have impacts that they shouldn't have. And so please, 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 to all the trans kids and their families out there right now, if you are beginning to encounter problems accessing your care, we want to know at FAIR Wisconsin so that we can better advocate for your needs and try and connect you with the resources that, that you need to get. So we have a tip line always open, and it is testimony@fairwisconsin.com. It's the same way we gather testimony when there is a bill in front of the front of the assembly, like the one that attempted to ban health care in this state for trans kids, but did not happen, which has also faces a certain veto if it ever goes any further than it is. That is a thing that I want people to really understand. This should have no bearing on Wisconsin. That does not mean it will not have some sort of chilling effect. And we need people to know where to turn if we're beginning to see that, because I want to be able to advocate effectively for our community. And I can only do that if I know what's going on.
And a bridge between my guest, Indy Gupta, and Abigail Swetz. I mentioned at the end of my discussion with Indy that I'm going to be focusing on Black women in the workforce, Black women as movement leaders. I'm also going to be joined by a Black trans woman tomorrow, Ellie Halo. I'm so excited to be talking about that and the risks specifically posed to women's bodies, and especially trans women and Black trans women. We're going to have that discussion tomorrow in honor of the Juneteenth Day celebration.
I'm so glad to hear that. That is incredible. Good.
I'm glad to hear that, too. And I'm going to say thanks to my amazing producers and our friend Angela Lang for helping us get in contact with Miss Halo and bring her onto the show to share her knowledge and life experiences with folks. We've got time for a quick call. We've got Susan from McFarland on the line. Susan, do you have a question for Abigail? Please say hello. And what's your thought or question this afternoon?
Hello. I too am sad about everything that's going on and the 988 number being defunded. And I think I actually volunteered on the hotline for single parents at a point in my life. And really, these hotlines are helpful because people have an opportunity to talk about their feelings to somebody they have no personal relationship with, and sometimes they can help. It helps them just get rid of a lot of the angst that they have, and they're very valuable.
Susan, you're a little murky there, so I hopped in. We appreciate you calling. Yes, being able to talk to a safe adult, as you were saying, Abigail, is so critical. According to a 2024 peer-reviewed study in Nature Human Behavior, the researchers at the Trevor Project, found that anti-transgender laws, such as the Tennessee law at issue in this case, directly caused an increase in suicide attempts among transgender youth by up to 72%. My God, truly shocking.
I think the other thing we need to know is that that same research also talked about how even the introduction of such bans is detrimental to the mental health and well-being of our youth. And there is a bill in Wisconsin right now. It will not become law. There is no question. Governor Evers has vowed to veto any bill that comes across his desk that would make our state less welcoming, less safe for LGBTQ plus youth. And even having the conversation with official lawmakers in an official hearing room is already bad for health because it's sending the wrong message to our kids. And so it is so important that the rest of us really step up and are those supportive adults in our trans youth lives.
I'm going to say this. We had an incredibly insightful comment from one of our watchers on Facebook. Thank you to Amber. She says this. Let's not alarm people. Access to crisis services will continue. 988 will continue to function for the foreseeable future. We'll let folks know when it's not. Fair Wisconsin is there. And she says this, gay kids and kids who are fabulously out of alignment with sex stereotypes come from a long line of strong and powerful activists. Let us end there. We stand with our trans youth. You are seen, you are loved. You do come from a long line of incredibly powerful activists. And all of us who see, know, and love you are here to support you. Please reach out to Fair Wisconsin. Abigail, thank you so much for being here on this incredibly important day. Thank you, Amber, watching on Facebook. That's going to do it for me this afternoon. Please call folks that you know in the LGBTQ community. Be a support network. Tell folks that you love them and you stand with them. It's so important today. I stand with the LGBTQIA plus community and every trans youth in Wisconsin and beyond because I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together. Take care, y'all.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.